Welcome to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. And guess what? It's Max Fun Drive time. This is the time of year when we both celebrate the members of Maximum Fun and ask you to join Maximum Fun by going to MaximumFun.org/join. This whole operation is supported by your memberships, and we could not appreciate them more. It's also the time when we offer our most special episodes, and this, friends, is one of those. Look, if you're ready to become a member right now, just pause the show, go to MaximumFun.org/join. It's so easy, you will feel great about it. Otherwise, I promise by halfway through this episode, you will feel that way. Let's get into this very special docket with a very special guest.
It's a very special docket, very specific docket, and I'm so glad we can get into it because I cannot wait to introduce this guest. He's an actor. He's a comedian. He's a co-host of the podcast Threedom with Scott Aukerman and Lauren Lapkus, The Neighborhood Listen with Nicole Parker, and Stay of Homekins with someone named Janie Haddad Tompkins. He's also universally renowned as the top podcast guest of all time because everyone likes to talk to him, including us. We're very lucky to have him here for the Max Fun Drive and to call him friend. So let's call him. Friend, is your name Paul F. Tompkins?
It is.
That's wonderful. Welcome, Paul.
Paul's ready to rock.
I'm ready to rock, to roll, to rumble, to stop, drop, and roll. It's wonderful to be here. It's nice to see you guys. It's been a while since I've visited the pod.
Paul, can I ask you to stop, drop, shut them down, and then open up shop?
I like to stop, drop, and rumble.
Okay, fair. Look, I'm not here to make you uncomfortable, Paul.
Look, the most important thing is stopping and dropping.
Okay,
that's right.
We can all agree on that.
Paul, it's so exciting to have you here, especially since the topic for our docket today is very specific. The topic is Paul F. Topics. We asked our listeners what they wanted to hear when it comes to your judgments on the issues of the day, topics related to or in the areas of expertise of Paul F. Tompkins. And our first Paul F. topic is going to hit pretty close to home.
Ugh.
And I'm not talking about Philadelphia yet. Jesse, why don't you hit us with a topic?
Listener member Kelly in Rochester, New York writes, "My husband's brother was set to get married in the spring of 2022, but then he and his fiance moved the date up to November 2023 as a fun surprise." This was the same weekend as Paul F. Tompkins' Varietopia show in Brooklyn. We had tickets for the show, and we were looking forward to seeing one of our favorite performers and visiting New York City. Instead, we spent the weekend with 25 strangers in Atlanta and my husband's divorced parents. It was emotionally exhausting, and Atlanta is boring. How can we punish my brother-in-law and his wife?
Wow. Lots to parse here.
Paul, before we get into how to punish these people, the punishment phase, tell us first about Varietopia, what we're talking about here, for people who may not know.
John, thank you for asking. Varietopia is a variety show that I host. I've been doing it off and on for many years and brought it back after quarantine. I realized how much I missed it, and it's been going strong ever since. It's music, it's comedy, it's any kind of performance that can fit on a stage.
And you're fitting a lot on the stage because there is a full orchestra, pretty much.
Yeah, well, in Los Angeles and New York when we do the show, okay. But anywhere else.
On the road, it's a dude with a kazoo?
Yeah. It's me and a boombox.
And a big piece of cardboard on the stage so that you can...
Of course, there's cardboard on the stage. But yeah, it's really fun. It's a different show every other month at Lodge Room in Los Angeles. And then we're going on tour this year, starting next month. And we're hitting a bunch of different cities. You can go to paulftompkins.com/live for all of those dates.
Now, I went to this particular Varietopia show at the Bell House in Brooklyn, November 2020. What was it? Three.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this review to offer Kelly and her husband who missed it. You messed up. It was a great show. Anyone who missed it to go to a wedding was a fool. I don't care how close a wedding it was. This was one for the ages. Paul, would you agree or disagree?
The show is more important than love. And
yeah.
I have to say, the idea of moving your wedding up as a fun surprise, I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah.
It goes... It absolutely is an insult to everyone. A wedding is a thing that you clear a date for and that's it. It doesn't change. You right. don't do that.
It doesn't say save some dates.
Yeah. if there's some sort of emergency or, you know, somebody falls ill or, you know, whatever, a hurricane wipes out your reception venue. I understand that, but not a fun surprise. First of all, it's not a fun surprise.
No. So, like, if we could all get in a TARDIS together and go back in time and space and say to Kelly when she opened up the email or whatever saying, hey, surprise, wedding's much earlier, would you counsel her, don't go to this wedding?
It's what was the relationship
husband's
again?
Brother, it's her husband's brother's wedding.
That's tough. That's very tough. And I guess it depends on how well those brothers get along. Obviously, the parents' marriage is a wreck, and they...
Legendary.
They clearly despise each other, otherwise it wouldn't be mentioned.
Right.
The fact that they're divorced, and I guess they... I don't know if it turns into a, you know, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf situation with them.
Look, my parents are divorced. They both came to my wedding, and nothing popped off, but all... expended much emotional energy in maintaining the peace.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear. There are definitely amicable divorces. There are divorces that are for the betterment of both members of the couple and the family. There are exes who can get along really well at weddings. I'm just talking about Kelly's father and mother-in-law, a legendary shipwreck of a marriage.
Yeah.
Should never have happened. I don't know about that, Kelly. Maybe that's not true, but I'm just imagining. You brought it up, so it must have meant something to you.
I'm sure Kelly is grateful for her husband existing in the world.
True. That's true. That's true.
And it sounded like a pretty small wedding, too, which makes it harder to get out of.
25 people.
They just mentioned 25 strangers. There could have been other people they knew there that they're not counting.
That's true.
I judge a wedding by how many strangers are there.
I forgot about that weird... That weird wedding tradition, something old, something blue, something borrowed, something new, and also 25 randos that you just, you pass out tickets at the Grove to come to your wedding. Just
a baker's two dozen of strangers.
In front of the dancing fountain.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, without knowing how close the brothers are, it makes it very difficult to advise, don't go to that wedding.
They've got to go to the wedding.
Yeah, I feel like unless you are legit estranged, you got to go.
May I use an internet term?
Please, I wish you would.
Counterpoint, they don't have to go.
Wow.
Counterpoint, they should skip it. Go back in time and skip it.
Wow.
I don't know. We're all of a level of, I don't want to say maturity. I'd rather say age, where feces doesn't really matter that much anymore.
Right.
A long, long time ago. And we'll call this person, what's a Ted? Ted is
a
name.
I was terrified you were going to launch into American Pie.
my wedding song, by the way, my first dance.
Do you know, on the topic of weddings, when we were planning our wedding and we were putting together the playlist for the reception, my mother-in-law, who I love dearly, really campaigned hard for us to include American Pie.
Oh.
And I thought, this is insane. I've never heard American Pie at a wedding.
Mm.
And so we're like, all right, I'll put it in there. People loved it.
Sure
I was astonished.
Wait, did it fill the dance floor with?
It did. Everybody got out there. Everybody sang along. I was stunned.
I was going to say the reason that that's a surprise perfect move, once I thought about it, is that it's a song that a certain generation would love to sing along to when they're drunk and in their cups.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's one that you can sing along to and get excited for while sitting down next to Aunt Harriet at the big table or whatever. Like, it's not a dancer. It's just a yeller of a song. But, I mean, people were dancing to it. That's weird because there are a lot of tempo shifts in that song.
But couldn't you play, like, Sweet Caroline or something that people love singing to that isn't so sad?
If my mother-in-law suggested that, we would have put that on there. But look, right. Everybody loved American Pie, even the 25 Strangers.
It worked. So what I was going to say is a long, long time ago, we were drinking whiskey and rye, and we were young people. And one of the first people to get married in our friend group was a person that we will call Ted. And Ted was getting married across the country. And I was definitely going to go to Ted's wedding. Mm-hmm. First big wedding. And my wife, who's a whole human being in her own right, who is then my girlfriend and also still a whole human being in her own right, also wanted to come but couldn't get off of work. And she was very upset about it. And she said, she expressed this to her mother. And her mother very wisely said, oh dear, don't worry. There'll be more Ted's weddings in the world. There'll be more Ted's weddings in the future. And my mother-in-law was absolutely right. At least two of them that I can think of.
With Ted?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, you know, people don't always get it right. Divorce is there for a reason. I'm sorry.
But Ted wasn't her brother.
Maybe I'm sanguine about this because I have no siblings, so I don't care, and I live only for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I do kind of feel like, I mean, we opened this conversation talking about what a unmitigated party foul it was to change the date of your wedding.
Absolutely.
As a fun surprise, absent any other context. Maybe there was some compelling reason why it needed to be moved up. I don't know. You know what I mean? But absent any other reason, if I've got a date to go see Paul F. Tompkins in New York City, if I've got a hotel room booked and airplane tickets booked and so forth, and you come back to me and say, sorry, it's not next May, it's 6 weeks from now, I think you'd be well within your rights, Kelly, to go ahead and say, I'm really sorry, I have to miss it. Here, I'm going to send you a pretty good gift, and we'll celebrate with you down the road.
John, I will say that the lack of siblings maybe is hampering your view of this a little bit, because it's a big deal. Family drama is a big deal. And but that aside, you can say to someone, no, I can't make it because you changed the date on me. And a thing that I have learned over the years is that it's okay to not give a reason why. You can just say, I can't do that. And your reasons are your own. And it's not for the other person to judge whether or not that's a valid reason to not do something. And because I used to, if I wanted to avoid doing something and somebody asked me to do, I would say, I can't do it. And here's why. And blah, blah, blah. And, you know, sometimes find myself making something up because I thought I didn't have a good enough reason. But the reason is, for whatever reason I have, I can't do that. And that's good enough.
Yeah. Another internet term or a phrase. No is a complete sentence. Something that I've
so true.
Read many times. And I think to myself, that's a very powerful sentence. And I wish I could act that way.
So true, bestie.
It's true. It's maybe I'm being a little cold. I was born that way. Siblingless, alone in this universe.
Yeah.
But I'll offer this. I'll split this baby down the middle and say, Kelly could have said no, and her husband could have gone to his brother's wedding, and she could have enjoyed.
That's very true.
Do you know what I mean?
That's like, very true.
That would have been a gracious way to get out of it.
Yeah.
But what's done is done is done. Mm-hmm. They missed your show. How do we get punishment or satisfaction or justice now that it's been done? You have to understand that Kelly has since they have a little baby now, and they live far away from New York or Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they will be near one of the places that you're going on tour for Varietopia, perhaps.
Yes, indeed. And if memory serves, those shows are archived online on my Vimeo page. And so you may watch them then. I feel bad making you pay for it twice.
Well, maybe the brother-in-law should pay for it.
Yeah, how about it? Yes, that's a great solution. I was also going to suggest, and this is from a movie I saw called Goodfellas, where you convince the brother and his wife that they have become made men in the crime family.
Sure.
And then you invite them to a ceremony, and then, of course, you murder them.
Creative.
That definitely, not only does it balance the scales in the Omerta community, but also it sends a message.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's extreme, but it's there as an option.
I'm going to paraphrase Goodfellas with a judgment here. Here's my message to Kelly's brother-in-law, whose wedding messed up their chance to go see Varietopia. fuck you, pay them. That's the quote. Kelly's brother-in-law, you own Kelly and your brother a trip to go see Varietopia. Go to, what is it, paulftompkins.com/live?
Yes. We'll be there in Brooklyn again next month.
Yeah.
And the divorced parents have to babysit together to make it possible.
There we go.
You have to get their parents back together.
Yeah, if we got a time machine, I think we should be parent trapping this thing.
Parent trap the whole, parent trap this situation. I'm very excited to be here in our sometime Manhattan chambers here at Digital Island, where I don't have a gavel, but I did find a rubber finger puppet of a giraffe, which you can see if you check us out on our YouTube page. YouTube page, boy, oh boy, am I old. This is the sound of a giraffe gavel. Boink, boink, boink. Judge John Hodgman rules on that one. That is all. Let's go to the next one.
Paul, can I ask you a question that I want to know?
Absolutely.
I, of course, have always admired, respected, and resented you for your extraordinary talent and because you are better friends than I am with a dog named Tugboat.
There.
Who is the dog I probably love most out of any dog that doesn't live at my house? How many dogs are you currently friends with? Because you're a legendary befriender of dogs.
I would say I'm probably friends with about 6 dogs.
You better get this number right because these dogs are going to get mad if you don't.
I know.
Don't count them.
I know. There's 6 dogs that I would say I'm absolutely friends with. Then there's
25 strangers.
25 strange dogs that I attend functions with. There's 2 dogs who are frenemies with me.
Oh, wow.
They're warming up to me so slowly at a glacial pace, but it is happening. Yeah. The rest, are just dog friends I haven't met yet.
Because you don't, but you have no dogs of your own. You just go through.
No, that I know of.
You go through Los Angeles and you befriend dogs that you come across.
Yes.
In your day and day. Right.
Okay. Because the reason I ask is that our friend Chuck Bryant from Stuff You Should Know wants to know. Has a dog ever full-on rejected your friendship?
This is unfortunately true. This has happened to me. And this is a dog named Georgie, who is the dog of my dear friends, Catherine and Mike. And Georgie is an adorable doodle of some kind who has mostly brown fur and a little white beard. I think she looks very much like Kris Kristofferson. And Georgie is very soft and fluffy, and I really love her. And she absolutely does not care for me. And there's nothing I can do. No amount of treats will change it. And I think it stems from very early on. Now, Georgie is not a very warm dog to begin with strangers.
Right.
But there was an incident where at Catherine and Mike's home, I accidentally stepped on Georgie's foot.
Oh, my gracious.
And I believe that Georgie has never and will never forgive me for that.
Right. I don't like it. Georgie, I'm wagging my giraffe finger puppet finger at you. You ought to be friends with Paul F. Tompkins. Boo.
All I want to do is love her. That's all.
Yeah. Well,
that's all I want to do.
John, we've got more Paul F. topics, but let's talk about the Max Fun Drive for a second because it's a special time of year. You're listening to Judge John Hodgman. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. Of course, the Judge John Hodgman podcast, always brought to you by you, the members of MaximumFun.org. Thanks to everybody who's gone to MaximumFun.org/join. And you can join them by going to MaximumFun.org/join. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by the good folks over there at Squarespace.
Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time. All in one place, all on your terms. Time, Jesse.
Have you heard about this Squarespace Blueprint?
No. Tell me all about it.
Squarespace Blueprint lets you choose from a professional layout and build a website for your product or your service or your creations from the ground up. You can accept payments, including Apple Pay, among other things. It is all seamless and easy and comes out gorgeous, whether or not you went into it with big time skills. That's what Squarespace is all about, helping you express yourself and helping you share your work with the world.
Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to www.squarespace.com/Hodgman to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by Aura Frames.
Hey, Mother's Day is coming up. Do you have a mom in your life that you'd like to celebrate? There are very few better ways than giving an Aura frame to someone you care about. These are beautifully Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos of your memories with your mom, stepmom, a mentor, friend, whatever it is in your life who might enjoy seeing photos from your life. Aura frames are the way to go.
Judge, there's a very special mom in my life, Ms. Teresa Thorne.
Yes.
That's my wife and also a whole human being in her own right. Guess what's on her bedside table? Yes, that's right. You guessed it in one, an Aura frame. What I love about the Aura frame is you don't have to load a bunch of stuff onto an SD card or whatever, like with the old digital frames. It is so easy to get the pictures on there. So like when Teresa texts me a cute picture of one of our children or our dog, or one of our siblings texts us a cute picture of one of them or one of their children, all I have to do is hit that share button on my phone and I can share it right to the frame and then it lives there for as long as I want. I can also take it off whenever I want, but I don't even have to open the Aura Frames app, which is a great app, but I don't even have to go there. It just goes straight into wherever I want it, whichever frame I want, or I have multiple Aura Frames in my house or all of them. It is incredibly easy. That's why Wirecutter chose it as the best digital photo frame. That's why it's one of Oprah's favorite things. It is guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame.
That's AuraFrames.com. Use the code Hodgman at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Welcome back to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. This week's episode is Paul F. Topics with the legendary Paul F. Tompkins.
I would have said, and forgive me,
yeah,
because I love a portmanteau, Paul F. Tompics.
From now on, this episode is dedicated to Paul F. Tompics.
Yes.
Right.
Victory in our time.
This feels like a challenge to me to say Tompics 7 more times over the course of the next 45 minutes.
Is it Tompics or Tompics?
Tompics.
Tompics. Paul F. Tompics.
I'm not picking anything.
No.
Tompics. So
you're picking on us.
I'm a bully.
No, you're a delight. Everyone knows you're not a bully.
But they know. They also all know your classic bully impression.
That really brings me back to fifth grade recess. Paul, everyone knows that you are not a bully. Everyone knows you cut a very fine jib. You like to wear nice clothes, and it's no surprise that we've had a few questions about some wardrobe questions, some sartorial questions, not only about the suits and such, but also hats. And we've got a question about two kinds of hats. It's a little loaded in the age of the internet. Jesse, why don't you give this one to Paul?
This is from Maximum Fun subreddit user Heavier Than Air. And the question is, what finally is the difference between a fedora and a trilby?
I'm very glad you asked. Every trilby is a fedora, but not every fedora is a trilby. If memory serves, from my years as a haberdasher at the famous Hats in the Belfry on South Street in Philadelphia, the shape of the fedora, the brim and everything, that's what makes it a fedora. And a trilby is a smaller, tighter version of that.
That means the brim is not quite as wide.
Yeah, the brim is shorter. Okay, the shorter crown is shorter. Yeah. And like your Indiana Jones, the professor of archaeology,
sure.
He wears a fedora.
Yeah, that's true.
A snap brim fedora. And a trilby is the hat that became called the fedora when people like characters from Entourage would be wearing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, And that's what a lot of people mistakenly just refer to. It's not mistakenly referred to as a fedora, but it is not as specific as what. And I think you want to be specific because you're talking about that kind of hat that you hate.
Yeah.
And the type of person that wears it that you're leery of, that is a trilby.
Paul, would you sport a fedora or a trilby today? You like that kind of hat?
Yeah.
Okay.
I often do. Yeah. Not a trilby, though. Trilby does not work for me with my head and face shape.
But not because of any cultural connotation, simply because you don't like the way it looks on you.
You know what it is? They're also, a lot of them are very, they're sort of cheaply made, you know? They're very mass marketed. You can get nicer ones.
Right.
But honestly, if I were to wear a trilby, I would have to take a page out of the book of my friend Lowly Worm and make it an Alpine
one. Whoa. And would you drive around in a little Apple car?
Of course I would.
That Apple car has got to be so much fun to drive around in. I bet it tips real easy, though. It's pretty tall.
Yeah, but then it just rolls.
It just rolls.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
We've got some hot hat talk coming up where we're going to visit a bunch of different hats in a moment. But before we leave the topic of hats, Paul, you mentioned hats in the Belfry.
Yep.
And I got very excited. I'm always so excited whenever you say hats in the Belfry because I love that weird hat store. And if you ever want to hear me being excited, get Paul's recording of his Laboring Under Delusions show, the Bell House edition from Brooklyn, live in Brooklyn.
Oh, yes.
And when you mention hats in the Belfry, you will hear someone in the background going, "Woo!" And Paul gets very confused as to why someone's doing that. That person is me. I'm getting very excited in that recording.
Did I know that?
No, you didn't know, and it freaked you out, and I apologize.
Is this a reveal right now that was you? We never talked about this before?
I've never told you? Maybe. I don't know. I remember it.
I don't think you have.
It was a great... Anyway, go get Paul's Bell House Brooklyn recording of Laboring Under Delusions. You brought up that you had worked in a haberdashery, and a number of people wrote in wanting to know if you could settle or explain the difference between a haberdasher and a milliner. Can either of you? You're both sartorial gentlemen.
A milliner makes hats.
Yeah.
A milliner is like me and Paul's friend Cody Walima of Walima Hat Works in Altadena, right, California. He makes the hats. A haberdasher is someone who sells gentlemen's clothing.
Yes. Haberdashery covers more than just hats.
All right. That's the answer that everyone was looking for.
Here's one from Max Fund member and subredditor Balta Nerdist. Is it ever okay to buy a pre-tied bow tie?
Sure.
Paul says sure.
I think it's fine because when I would wear bow ties, I'm going to say this is before 2007, 8. It would be a pre-tied bow tie if I had to wear a tuxedo for something. And then eventually I was like, I want to teach myself how to do this. So I watched a number of YouTube tutorials and none of them was really getting me to the finish line. I remember I had bought a bow tie, a self-tie bow tie, and I was doing shows with Amy Mann. We were on the road and I said, you know what? I'm just going to quickly watch some videos on my phone, learn how to do this so I can wear it for the show. And I tried for an hour. I watched multiple videos and at the end I got it to sort of look like a bow tie, but it still wasn't quite right. And I also gave myself a repetitive stress injury in my arms where I could not feel my hands.
Whoa.
For about an hour, 90 minutes, and had to like trust that I was holding the microphone correctly.
No.
I eventually saw a video that included a part that the other videos did not include. They included an angle the other videos did not include. I was like, that's it. I like being able to tie a bow tie, but I'm not really strict about what's okay and what's not okay with fashion because fashion is all made up. Right. And if you want to wear a bow tie and you don't know how to do it, sure, throw in a self-tie bow tie. They make good ones now that they make some that don't look pre-tied, but it's fun to learn. I would say it's okay to wear the pre-tied. But it's fun to learn how to do it, and you'll be glad that you did.
Paul, you taught me how to tie a bow tie at your wedding.
I remember that. You know, there were, I had two pupils at that wedding.
Oh, I thought I had signed up for the solo mentoring, but okay.
No, two guys signed up for it at the same time, and I was double booked. There was nothing I could do.
Oh, all right.
But I think I was able to teach you, but I was not able to teach Phil, unfortunately.
Oh, no, really? Is that why he's always wandering around with that untied bow tie around his neck, even to this day?
Yeah.
Judge Hodgman.
Here comes Jesse Thorne.
I hate pre-tied bow ties. I think if you're put in a situation where you have to wear a bow tie, like you're in a wedding party.
Right.
And you don't have the chance to learn how to tie it yourself, I don't think anyone is going to judge you. I think it'll be fine. But I kind of feel like if you're going to do it regularly, like if it's going to be part of your life, it's a do it or don't do it situation. Because I feel like a self-tied bow tie looks so much better. And I think the mistake sometimes that non-bow tie wearers make is they think their goal in tying their own bow tie is to make it look like a pre-tied bow tie, which is to say to have it be perfectly aligned. But actually the purpose, like if you're wearing a bow tie, the reason you're doing it is to have an unusual and expressive form of neckwear, right? Like it's, you know, maybe you're a doctor and you don't want your long tie to, you know, be unsanitary or whatever. That's why a lot of doctors wear bow ties instead of long ties.
Because their ties are constantly dipping into open wounds.
Well, right. Well, there's like reasons why you don't want, some people wear a bow tie because they don't want a long tie flapping around.
Yeah, that's why Orville Redenbacher wore a bow tie, because otherwise this tie was going to get in the butter.
Yeah, he didn't want his tie getting popped.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like when you are tying it yourself, which I think, as Paul said, like, it's not super hard to learn. It will pop in when it pops in. And for a lot of people, the secret is that it's just exactly the same as tying your shoes. Mm-hmm. Some people don't have the like way to shift the geometry in their head from their top of their shoe to their neck, just different kind of brains. But for a lot of people, it's like, it's the same as tying your shoes. And then they're like, oh, okay. And then they can just do it. But I think that the reason that you wear a bow tie is for the expressiveness. And that expressiveness takes the form of it being floppy, it being uneven, it being expressive. And so
a little imperfect because it's fun. Yeah.
And I find myself, unless, you know, there are bow tie, if you're Pee Wee Herman or you're in the Fruit of Islam, then that little straight, you know, if you're Brother Muzone from The Wire, that little straight 60s pre-tied bow tie is what it is. But like, I always, like, for example, when watching The Good Place and seeing one of the most brilliant actors of our time in a wonderful role, Ted Danson, who always wore a bow tie, I was always bummed that it was obviously a pre-tied bow tie. And when you're making a TV show, I'd imagine there's continuity issues. But it still was always a bummer, because I thought, like, if he's wearing the bow tie as a character thing, that he's like that kind of guy. Well, that kind of guy loves to show a little something in his tie.
Well, let's jump ahead here to this question from listener member Chris Hockman, because this is pertinent. It's a very open-ended question for you, Paul. What is gauche? Are there any strict fashion crimes that you think that someone should ever, never... A person should never do or wear?
I don't think so.
No.
I think you can wear whatever you want. I mean, one of the great things about living in the time that we do is that people are allowed to dress in their own way, and there's not a social uniform that everyone has to follow as there was in days gone by. I used to be stricter about this stuff, and now it's like, it's up to you if you want to play by the rules of these things go with each other, these things don't go with each other, that kind of thing. That can be fun, you know, if you want to put together an outfit like that. That said, I think that fashion is it's all made up. And it's like, if there's no practical reason to not do something, then do it, you know.
Is there an occasion where it would be inappropriate to wear a suit with little anchors on it modeled after the suit that the mayor wore in Jaws?
Absolutely no occasion is inappropriate for that.
I'd wear that in a baseball game.
Absolutely. I will say this though, and because it's on the, we mentioned weddings earlier. I think there are occasions where if somebody asks you to dress up, you got to dress up, you know, because there is something fun about the ceremony of things. Like, this is the only time I do this is for this occasion, you know?
Right.
And I think that's something that you should observe. And I think that if you're somebody who doesn't like suits or you don't like dresses or whatever, find your way that you're comfortable with that while still abiding by the dress code. There's so much stuff out there. There's so many ways you can go where you're still wearing a suit and tie, you're still wearing a dress, but it doesn't make you feel uncomfortable.
Something a little special and elevated at the very least that will show you're honoring the fact that you're blowing off Paul F. Tompkins' Varietopia show to go to this annoying wedding in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But you're doing it out of respect for the relationship that your husband has with his brother.
Fashion is also a social act, right? It is an act of communication and communion with others. And so I think it is important to remember that you are making a choice in that area. You're not only choosing something that affects you, but something that communicates with the people around you. And so, like, just as on Judge John Hodgman, we often have those dads who think they have a system that supersedes everything else.
Right, because it's quote-unquote logical.
Yeah, or whatever.
Or whatever, right.
I think that when we are getting dressed every day, we are expressing ourselves, but self-expression is not the only goal of getting dressed, right? Like, at a wedding, part of what you're doing is communicating that you're participating in a ceremony with everyone else, where part of that ceremony is that everyone wears the similar kind of outfit, right? That we're all doing that as part of this act together. If you go to an office where people wear suits and ties or, long skirts or whatever, part of that act is a specific social choice, right? It's a choice that we all wear this thing together to show that we're serious about the work that we're doing.
Let's say you are a finger puppet giraffe at Digital Island Studios in Manhattan, and you can't tie a bow tie because you don't have arms. Mm-hmm. Is it okay to use a Ricola from the bowl of Ricolas on the table and look like this? Is that a good bow tie?
I think that looks smashing.
Doesn't that look good?
It's really great, and it has all those Swiss herbs.
I would wear that if it were bow tie sized.
Can we commission a Ricola shaped bow tie for Paul?
Honestly, I think that would be really funny.
I think that would be the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile of bow ties.
Absolutely.
This one is from listener member Corsair. Top five hats. Schultzbuster said beret. This is top to bottom. Beret.
Oh, no.
Sou'wester. Breton cap. Straw cattleman. Newsboy cap.
Number one is newsboy cap.
First of all, Schultzbuster, I happen to know that you don't live in America, but this is America and baseball cap has to be in there. There's no top five hat list in the United States that doesn't include baseball hat. That's insane. That's madness.
We're going to be talking about baseball later, and Paul is wearing a baseball hat right now.
It's true. Beret is number one is astonishing to
me. No, number five. That was number five.
The beret was number five.
Oh, number five. Yeah. Still, a beret would not have been in my top five.
No.
I've worn a beret some lately, John. I wore a beret on tour. I liked it.
What's a sou'wester?
Is that the kind of hat that you wear in a nor'easter? Like that big Gorton's fisherman hat?
This is a joke list. I do not accept this list.
Yes, it's that big yellow cap.
Oh, come on.
On a fish stick box.
Come on.
Yeah, don't be silly.
No, that's not a fashion hat. That's a weather protection hat exclusively.
No one wears that hat because they like wearing that hat. It's because they work at a lighthouse and it sucks.
Yeah.
What's a Breton cap? I don't know what a Breton cap is.
That's like a sort of, not a Greek fisherman's cap, but a sort of peaked cap. I do like a Breton.
It's probably Breton.
Breton.
Hat to Breton.
It is a lot like a Greek fisherman's hat. It's also a little bit like a like a cabbie's hat. It's like an all black cabbie's hat. Mm-hmm.
And now that we've talked about a bunch of different hats, I feel like do you feel warmed up? You ready to go? You got sure. You got a top five? Paul F. Yeah. Tompkins' top five?
I'm going to say top hat number one with a bullet. I'm going to say a straw boater number two.
Ooh.
Wow.
Then I'm going to put your peaked cap variety number three. I do love a peaked cap.
I don't, forgive me. I'm not sure I understand what a peaked cap
like
is.
Any sort of uniform looking cap.
Mm-hmm. You know, oh, like I mean? A bus driver hat.
Just a general, hat. Yeah.
Okay.
From like the very structured uniform hat down to like a sailor's fiddler cap or whatever. Like that sure. style I really like.
Sure. A sailor's hornpipe.
Number four, I'm gonna put a newsboy there. And number five, baseball hat.
Yeah. I got my number one hat, corduroy Hartford Whalers baseball hat sent to nice. Me by Jesse Thorne.
Nice.
Cannot very leave nice. The house without getting one compliment from at least one hockey dude. The greatest. The greatest conversation starter if I want to be friends with hockey dudes.
Paul F. Tompkins is, of course, from the great city of Philadelphia, and we will be covering Philadelphia topics in just a moment. And it's Max Fun Drive time right now. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
It's the Judge John Hodgman podcast, Paul F. Tompkins edition.
And Paul, we've mentioned that your home city is Philadelphia. That is correct. Where you are from. It is where you worked at Hats in the Belfry on South Street.
It is where I worked at Beta Only Video.
Beta Only Video.
Wow.
Paul, when you were on South Street, maybe you went over to Jim's Steaks. Maybe you, the Great Philly Pizza Company.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
There used to be a great, like, antiquarian bookstore on South Street.
Absolutely. Big orange cat in the window always. Yeah, absolutely. Man. Soaking up that sun.
I used to walk South Street because my mom was from Philadelphia and my family still lives there. And I love talking about Philadelphia with you. So we had to talk about some Philadelphia stuff. Sure. Jesse, what's the first one we got?
This one is from Max Fun subredditor
UND88.
Who wins in a fight, Gritty or the Philly Fanatic?
The question is false because they would never fight.
Bingo.
They would never fight. Philly Fanatic, greatest to ever do it. Gritty has injected so much fun stuff into the concept of mascot. You absolutely love to see it. He really, really legitimately entertains me. Like, the Philly Fanatic is I think the best of the classic mascots, and Gritty represents the future of what mascots could be.
You're not saying that neither one of them could be hypnotized by a supervillain into fighting with the other one?
No, never.
I have to say, like, the idea that the same guy and his firm created the Philly Fanatic, whatever, 40, 50 years ago now, then re-revolutionized mascot construction with Gritty 30, 35 years later.
Oh, wow.
Is absolutely extraordinary to me. What an act of genius. Yeah.
I didn't know it was the same person, the same mascot designer.
This guy runs a mascot firm. He's a genius. I heard an interview with him one time. He's like the ultimate Kiwanis Club speaker. Like, just his entire life is like an expression of like motivational aphorism in the absolute purest and best way. Like, he really is like, I just follow my joy. And you're like, I believe you, sir. That sounds great.
Every half century, I come up with a new one. Let me say this about Gritty. And I'm talking directly to the camera right now.
All right. It's watching you.
You're just listening. I'm talking directly to your ears. I remember when Gritty was first debuted and all the people online tried roasting him and saying, what is this nightmare fuel and blah, 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 blah. Ugh. And I knew he was good. And I told you all, you'll see eventually you'll all love this guy. And I was right.
Gritty got the PFT vouch.
I knew it. I could see it. He was beautiful.
It's almost like people online don't want to like anything.
Exactly.
Counterpoint, it's good.
Yeah. It's not like mascots are debuting all the time, but we've gotten so, you know, poisoned by the internet that anything that's introduced now that's whimsical, we're like, this sucks. And it didn't suck. It was great.
How did you feel when the Phillies Fanatic debuted in, I think it was 1978 or so?
Yeah, I was a little kid.
Was that
kid,
a big
I
deal? I remember it was a big deal
yeah,
to me, and I wasn't from Philadelphia.
Absolutely, yeah. Because the Phillies, I don't think it had a real 3D mascot like that that was fun and interactive or anything. They had like a few,
I think they had
Phil and Phyllis and, you know, all that, but they weren't the same as what the Philly Fanatic was doing. Which
Phil
was,
and Phyllis sound like grandparents. That does not sound like fun.
Oh,
even
guess
with
what?
A PH.
Two little colonial children? Yeah, they're not a ball.
Problematic much? No, thank you. What did you know that they changed the Philly Fanatic design? They lightened the fur and put pink stars around its eyes?
I did, and I finally got used to it. I got used to it.
Yeah.
It was honestly very jarring to me at first, but I got used to it.
Did you guys know that the San Diego Chicken is just a guy? And he's like in his 70s now. He's always been the San Diego Chicken. Yeah. He owns the San Diego Chicken. And he may die and bring the San Diego Chicken with him to his grave.
He's got
to
be buried in the costume.
What assumes?
You have to.
Is there anything San Diegan about a chicken that I'm missing? Like, is there any?
Absolutely not. No.
It's just random.
The San Diego Chicken is an extreme. It's like the Harlem Globetrotters. Or something. It's not tied to San Diego in a meaningful way in 2024.
Was it, maybe I'm misremembering this, was it originally a radio mascot that became sort of gravitated towards the Padres or something?
I believe it. I don't think Gritty and the Philly Fanatic would ever fight, but I think the Swingin' Fryer and the San Diego Chicken might have it out.
For sure. Absolutely.
Fryer versus Fryer, right?
Hey!
You've done it!
Okay, here's something from listener member Nick W. If I'm in Philadelphia, should I eat scrapple? Is it actually good, or is it something people in Philadelphia eat because it's there?
Yeah, here we go.
Well, I mean, we also eat it because we think it is good. I personally love it. It's its own taste, and you know, I'm extremely biased. I'm extremely biased. I go to the point of having it shipped here so I can have it on the weekends as a little treat. But my wife from South Carolina finds it disgusting, hates the smell of it cooking, will not eat it. But she will eat boiled peanuts, which is just wet peanuts. So everybody has their thing. Every region has their thing. And sometimes people can get into it. Sometimes people can't. I would say try it at least. You know, if you are carnivorous, give it a shot. And if you don't like it, I get it. I'm not going to try to convince you otherwise. Food is food. Like, there's no, it's, Scrapple is not an essential vitamin source. So I'm not going to try to tell people, no, you must eat this.
Well, it was to people in the British Navy in the 18th century. Course, yeah. That's how they held off scurvy.
But I'm not going to try to convince somebody they have to eat a brick of sweepings because I think it's good.
Meat sweepings.
Yeah.
I'll say this, John, I'm from San Francisco, as you know, and live in Los Angeles. I've been to Philadelphia a few times. Each time I have eaten Scrapple, and maybe it's because I like the idea of a brick that combines the sort of sausage and carb into one thing. That sounds pretty good to me, and I ate it and liked it. It's not something I would have shipped to me because I don't have the emotional attachment to it that Paul has, but I certainly would, you know, go out to one of those Amish breakfast places in Philly and have them fry me up some for sure.
For those who don't know, Scrapple is a kind of sausage loaf in the Mid-Atlantic region, Philadelphia, South Jersey, Baltimore. And it does have origins in the Pennsylvania German Amish community.
Yes.
But it is food. It's called Scrapple for a reason. It's right there in the name, scrap. It's trimmings from pork that you wouldn't otherwise have use for.
It's everything that's not good enough to make it into a hot dog.
Right. There should be a Scrapple van. You know what I mean? Like, if there's an Oscar Mayer Wienermobile.
You know, the Cybertruck is almost a Scrapple van.
That's true. And you form this into a loaf. You grind that stuff up with cornmeal, I think, typically. And you form it, and sage, and you form it into a loaf, and then you fry it. Now, I love Scrapple. I love Scrapple even though I do have to eat it to live, because as a child, I was cursed by a Philadelphia mummer. Mm-hmm. And if I don't eat Scrapple twice a year, I will expire.
Yeah.
But even so, even though it is mandatory, I enjoy it very much. And I would say that you can have it shipped to you. Sometimes you can find it. We used to be able to find it in the freezer section of our supermarket in Maine for some reason. I don't know why. I mean, sometimes it manifests in strange places. I actually just had it last weekend because my sister-in-law found it in a market in the Upper West Side. I got to get up there and stock up.
Wow!
But if you're going to try it, you really should wait till you're in Philadelphia where they know how to make it, because it's not easy to make. You have to either deep fry it, which is that was the Little Pete's way, as you'll remember, Paul, when we went to have breakfast there once or twice.
Yeah.
In a diner, they'll take a big slice of Scrapple and they'll deep fry it because it's got to form a crust.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just mush. Or you have to cook it very slowly in a pan. But if you're in Philadelphia, I'm with Paul. And if you eat that kind of thing, you should give it a try, because it's one of the few places where they actually know how to make it properly. Yeah. But Paul, I got a couple of follow-ups.
Sure.
A little bit of a lightning round.
Mm.
Scrapple or pork roll? You can only have one.
Oh, Scrapple.
Cheesesteak or hoagie, or cheesesteak hoagie, or roast pork sandwich?
Cheesesteak.
Just straight up.
Mm-hmm.
With or without onions?
With.
What kind of cheese? Whiz or no whiz?
Whiz, please. But if not whiz, American cheese is very good on a cheesesteak.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And do you have a preferred place to get it in Philadelphia?
My preferred place was always Ishka Bibble, which was a little window on South Street between 3rd and 4th.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Boy, they had some quaint names for businesses on South Street.
Boy, they did. You know, these baseball players also have some strange names these days.
Tasty Cake. Here we go. Last one. Tasty Cake or Bookbinder's Snapper Soup?
I'd take the one and dip it in the other. Take a bite of that crimpet and then dip it in there, let it soak up the brine.
Paul, we've got one here from listener member Brendan. Philadelphia water ice or lunar water ice, which is to say the ancient water that is frozen at the poles of the moon.
What color is it?
Gray. I gotta say gray.
Nah, water ice then. Water ice, excuse me.
Water ice.
My favorite flavor, red.
Is that, that's how you order it, right? You order it by the color?
No, it's just by flavor. But when I was a little kid, I was just like, it was all colors to me.
That's what they call Italian ice in
New
England.
Yeah. It's shave ice is more, first of all, you got the ice cream in there as well, but it's more granular. And Italian ice or water ice is more, it's smooth. It's got a creamier texture to it.
Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like a
really good
dense sorbet. Maybe.
Yeah. The last time I was in Philly, I had a water ice for the first time in decades, and it was truly delicious.
Last time I was down the shore, I went to Rita's water ice, and I said, it's sort of like a dense sorbet, isn't it?
And Rita said yes.
You're the expert.
You're right, hon.
Yeah. Speaking of the moon, by the way, the lunar surface thereof, our friend David Reese recently posed a question on their podcast, Election Profit Makers, with John Kimball. And I'm going to pose it. Well, I'm not going to pose it to you because it's dumb. If your safety was assured, would you rather walk on the surface of the moon or walk through the wreck of the Titanic? Obviously, you're in a containment suit of some kind.
The moon.
The moon, right? It's obvious.
There's something about shipwrecks, underwater shipwrecks, is so scary to me. It's so eerie and spooky, and I think it would really freak me out.
I think it's self-evident that the moon is the only answer, but let me rephrase a slightly different question. If your safety was assured, again, you would survive this experience. Would you rather walk on the surface of the moon or watch the Phillies win the World Series from the surface of the field of Citizens Bank Park?
Oh, like I'm on the field?
And
like
you're
on
the field. And specifically, David is talking about you can walk around on the field completely safely without interfering with the play. You're guaranteed. So you can walk out to left field.
Yeah.
You can go over to shortstop. Wherever you want to be, you're not messing with the game and you're safe.
Yeah, you would experience it, but I guess you would be like invisible and intangible to the play. Like you wouldn't be interfering with the game in any way. Maybe they would see your footsteps. No, because then they would get distracted.
This is a harder question than I thought it would be.
Those are your things. But you'd be alone, obviously. You'd be watching. And they would win the World Series.
And if you wanted to participate in, like, the World Series celebration, obviously you would have to wrap yourself in bandages.
Yeah. Which might be scary to the players. And I don't want to bum them out. They just won the World Series.
I don't know. Most baseball teams have at least one mummy, right?
Yeah, but now there's two. You know what I mean?
That was the old...
I think John McGraw always kept a mummy around for good luck.
If this is our mummy, who's that mummy?
Paul, people may or may not know that you know, the past dozen, maybe 5 to 8 years or so, you have really gotten into baseball.
I reignited my childhood love of the game, yes.
Yeah, you're wearing a Phillies baseball cap right now, which looks very snappy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, we've talked about it for a while, and now a decision must be made. Would you want to walk on the surface of the moon as a tangible human being, or would you want to walk around the field during the World Series winning game of the Philadelphia Phillies?
Meaning that the Phillies do win that World Series.
That is right.
I gotta go with the moon. I mean, it's the moon.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, as much as I've, first of all, trying to convince people that this story is true, that I was there invisibly for the game, is gonna be the rest of my life. No one believes me.
So you would go to the moon because not only would you get to experience the moon, but everyone would know you went to the moon, and then you'd get to be in a ticker tape parade and you'd be famous for it.
I hope so.
Paul, I have one last question for you before we go. Okay. And this isn't a judgment question. It's a trivia question because I learned this and it surprised me as I was doing my research.
All right. Fun.
According to the obituary of this famous Philadelphian broadcaster in 2016, famous Philadelphian broadcaster dies 2016. According to this person's obituary, what do Elvis Presley, Martina Navratilova, Jim Henson, Frank Perdue, and the Philly Fanatic all have in common? And I'll give you a hint. The Philly Fanatic, according to the Wikipedia article I read, debuted on this person's program in 1978, was introduced to the children of Philadelphia on this program.
Can I hear the list again?
Yeah. Elvis Presley, Martina Navratilova, Jim Henson, Frank Perdue, and the Philly Fanatic.
This seems impossible, but I'm going to say they all appeared on Captain Noah and His Magical Ark.
Sound effect, please. Indicating triumph, because you're absolutely right.
Wow. It was either that or Al Albert Showcase.
I don't know. I don't even know that one.
Man, it's a shame. I mean, is there such a thing as local programming anymore? Because that was
YouTube, I guess.
Local programming was so, it was a special weird thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, I took for granted at the time. And when I think about it now, Al Albert Showcase was a variety show hosted by this man, Al Alberts, who was in a singing group, Al Alberts and the Four Aces.
Sure.
And I think their big hit that charted was Heart of My Heart. And so he would host this show that over the years just became Al Alberts and a bunch of little kids. And no. The little kids would tell jokes and they would sing songs. And Andrea McArdle, Broadway's first Annie.
Sure.
I think broke out of Al Alberts Showcase.
Right.
But it really, over the years, I don't remember seeing an adult on the show besides Al Alberts in the last decade of that show.
Maybe there's a good reason there isn't local programming anymore. Well, it's starting to sound a little.
There was never anything untoward implied about Al Alberts. He was just this grandfatherly type guy. And he would, you know, the kids would call him Uncle Al. And was like, Uncle Al, I have a joke for you. And he would say, okay, what is it? And they would stammer their way through this corny old joke. And then he would act like he'd never heard this joke before and the audience would applaud. And, but Captain Noah was a kid show.
Yeah.
With a nautical theme. Captain Noah had this arc. He dressed in this, old fashioned maritime uniform, and he would have guests on and they would do crafts and, you know, they would send in, he would encourage kids to send in pictures.
Send your pictures to dear old Captain Noah.
That's right. And they would put them on the air as the song, send your pictures to dear old Captain Noah, would play.
Wow.
And they would sing the song for as long as they showed the picture. There were not many verses to it. So they would start it up from the beginning. And they would show, you know, these terrible kids drawing on the air. It was adorable.
Paul, that was so lovely to hear you sing that song. And thank you for being here. It's such a delight to have you on the show whenever you can come by.
It's always my pleasure, gents.
You're going on tour with Varietopia.
Yes, I am.
I happen to know that you're making a swing through New England.
That's correct.
Going to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, of all places, and Waldo, Maine. The Waldo Theater in Waldoboro, Maine.
Yeah.
Which is going to be a delight. I'm going to try to hit that show. And Kelly, if you're out there, you got free tickets coming to you from your brother-in-law.
Yeah.
For any show that's closest to you, just go to paulftompkins.com/live and also make sure to listen to Freedom and the Neighborhood Listen and Stay F Homekins.
If you're listening to this and it's not already evident to you, Paul F. Tompkins is the greatest comedy podcaster in the world. And you should be listening to at least one of his programs, if not all of them. Drop our show, listen to his.
And if you Google Captain Noah and go to the Channel 6 website where they have some of the old shows archived, there's one that comes in from 1977, top of the list. At the end of it, Captain Noah introduces his wife, Mrs. Noah, who's always on the show.
That's right.
And his daughter and his grandchildren, and he sings the song, and they've got a goat that they're holding. It's the most adorable. Like, I couldn't stop. Also, I just want to say thank you also to our new mascot, Ricky, the Ricola bow-tied giraffe. Picks no fights with Gritty or the Fanatic. This is one of the top mascots of all time. And Paul, is there anything else you'd like to mention before we let you go back to your regular life?
No.
Thank you, Paul. And the docket is clear. It is Max Fun Drive. This is the second and final week of Max Fun Drive. This is something we do only once a year. So this is the absolute best possible time to join. You can get all kinds of cool bonus content and our deepest appreciation at any level, starting at $5 a month at MaximumFun.org/join. If you're already a member, you can also give a little boost. Maybe you picked up one of our great new shows like Free With Ads or Valley Heat, and you want to make sure that a little money's flowing their way. You can upgrade whatever you want, MaximumFun.org/join. But this is the last time we're asking on the air, so please do it now at MaximumFun.org/join. The link is also, you can just open up that podcast app. The link's right there in the show notes. Tap on MaximumFun.org/join. It is available to you.
And remember, you can only get those thank you gifts like our friend of the court pin during these 2 weeks of the Max Fun Drive. So time is running out. You can see that pin on Instagram.com/JudgeJohnHodgman. And when you go to MaximumFun.org/join to join or upgrade or boost or do anything to your membership, MaximumFun.org/join. Won't you please go over there and join us? We really can't do it without you, and we're so glad to be able to do it with you.
Yeah, so many thanks to everybody who has already joined this year. This has been a huge year for us. We have a new editor in AJ McKeon. We have a new video editor in Daniel Spear. We've got all this new video equipment that we're making videos of the show with. We have, of course, as always, our brilliant producer, Jennifer Marmer. And it is your membership that makes all of their jobs possible. We couldn't make the show without them, and they couldn't work here without your membership. Judge John Hodgman, of course, created by Jesse Thorne and John Hodgman. You can find photos from the show and all those cool Max Fun Drive thank you gifts at Judge John Hodgman on Instagram, also on the Maximum Fun page for this episode. We're also on TikTok and YouTube, Judge John Hodgman Pod. Follow and subscribe to see our episodes and also our special video-only content.
Paul, speaking of all of your wonderful podcasts, you have an amazing podcast with your wife and whole human being in her own right, the actor Janie Haddad Tompkins. It's called Stay F Homekins. You do it once a month.
That is correct.
And I was extremely excited to be a guest on one of your bonus Patreon episodes.
Yes. We're reacting to episodes of Vanderpump Rules because our recapping skills proved to be non-existent.
Oh, okay. Well, I was very thrilled to be a part of that and to be introduced to the Vanderpumperverse. reality TV is full of disputes, which only leads me to imagine that our audience must have some disputes centered around reality TV. Mm. Are you Team Sandoval and thus alienating everyone in your life? Do you like the new cast of The Real Housewives of New York, even though your Bravo text thread hates it? Does your partner think that Love Island US is better than Love Island UK? Ooh, Nas and I have a bone to pick with you about that. Send in your reality TV show disputes to MaximumFun.org/join, and maybe we'll hear one on a future case.
We'll take any dispute, big or small, MaximumFun.org/JJHO. And of course, when you do that, we're always grateful to hear that you are a Maximum Fun member. We'll talk to you at MaximumFun.org/join and next time on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows
supported directly
by you.